about the technical side of audio podcasting. No video podcasting, because I don't do that. This, what I do is audio podcasting. I'm going to be covering some technical stuff. Please don't feel overwhelmed if you don't understand everything I'm talking about. I'm a very technical person. I knew all sorts of stuff about computers and all that great stuff before I even thought about doing podcasting. And when I started learning about microphones and mixers and all that stuff, I was just in over my head. Even being a technical person, it took me weeks, months, asking questions in order to understand this stuff. However, by sitting through me talking about this, you're gonna have an exposure to it. You're gonna know what a mixer is, what a microphone is. You may not know how to set one up while I'm gonna go over doing some of that stuff. You might not know how to do that if you went home today and bought a mixer, but you kinda know some of the terms, you'd be familiar with it. So the next time when you go to do your research, you know what research to do. When someone starts talking about a mixer, you know what it is, that type of stuff. So again, I'm gonna get a little technical here. If you have any questions, raise your hand. If I mention something that you'd like to contradict and you're a seasoned podcaster, throw your hand up as well, and we'll address that. So I'm going to start off by talking about going over technical decisions. We're going to go into a discussion of hardware, talk about setting that hardware up, talk about software tools you use for podcasting, and end up with hosting and discussion on RSS, really simple syndication. I start off with my header here that content is king. I definitely agree with that. If you have really good content and the quality of your show isn't that great, people will still listen to it. If you have an interview with President Obama and there's background fuzz and, you know, like static in the background, people will still listen to that, right? Because they want to hear that president, that interview with Obama. However, if I'm not doing interviews with Obama. So my content may not be that great. So I want my quality to be as good as possible. So right after content is, in my mind, quality. So that's why I don't know if I coined this phrase. I came up with it on my own, but someone else might have said it. But I say content is king, but quality is queen. So when you're first starting off with a podcast, you have to make a few technical decisions. The first one would be the number of hosts you're planning on having locally. So sitting around a table and talking together. Is it just going to be you? Are you going to bring your wife in? Are you going to bring a friend in? And also guests. If you're ever planning on interviewing someone locally or having guest hosts, that's something to think about, because that's going to determine the equipment you're going to end up buying. How many remote hosts are you planning on having? Same thing. You know, regular hosts, guest hosts. You know, that's going to be remotely, maybe communicating over Skype, that type of thing. Or maybe even going over a phone line. You might be doing interviews over phone. Do you want to include real-time sound effects while you're doing your show, or do you want to add those in post? Do you want to be able to play voicemails and listen to them and then respond immediately? Do you want to be playing Foley sounds and, you know, stuff like that? Car crashes. And what is your recording interface going to be? You can buy like a dedicated recorder like an iRiver or the Marantzes and stuff like that. A little bit expensive, and it's a dedicated device. They do have some nice features, but I would recommend just going with a computer. That's the easiest way, and plus you have a nice visual. One of the main reasons I recommend a computer is because you have nice visualization of your levels as you're recording. And also, probably one of the most important things, your budget. How much money are you willing to spend? Because I've spent probably close to $600 or $700, or maybe even more, that's just all I've counted, on podcasting equipment. And I don't make any money doing podcasting. It's a hobby for me. I never plan to make money off of podcasting. So that's something else to consider. What is your budget? Are you planning on making money? If you are, maybe you'll spend a little bit more. If you're not, how much is this hobby worth to you? So let's talk a little bit about hardware that you're going to buy for podcasting. The first thing that you're going to need to do is pick up a microphone. There's a couple of microphones, different interfaces for microphones that you can get. I'm going to first talk about USB. With USB, if you're going to use USB, USB works. Remember why I talked about number of hosts local? USB is only going to work if you have one local host. The reason for that is if you have more than one USB microphone, you can't hook them up to the same computer. There's some software that can kind of hack it, but I said the word hack there. It really doesn't work great. If you're going to have more than one local host, or even if you're going to be interviewing someone, you're going to want to go with a mixer. And we'll talk about that in a couple of seconds here. Well, let's first talk about microphones. So you have a couple options if you go USB. Probably one of the more cheaper and easier options is to go with a headset. The quality is not the best, though, but you'll be spending here. I have a couple of Plantronics headsets. I always go with Plantronics with these guys. They've been around for a long time. It's good quality products. be looking to spend somewhere around $50 to $80 on a headset there. The nice thing about the headset is it's a built-in microphone and headphones at the same time, so you're doing monitoring, you can monitor your sound live. You can also buy standalone USB microphones, like the Snowball that they're giving out as prizes here. Actually, I had that listed before I knew they were giving some of those out here. Also, if you want to go a little bit cheaper, I mean, again, that's a $130 microphone, though. If you want to go a little cheaper, you can go with like a Samson here or some other standalone microphones. If you're looking to maybe start off with just you, but you think, maybe in the future, I might throw another guest host in. Maybe I don't want to plunk down the money to buy a mixer right now, so I'm going to start off, see how this goes, but I might get a mixer in the future. Consider getting a USB interface for a standard microphone. So you buy your standard microphone, and then you hook it up over USB, and then when you decide to buy another one of those microphones and add an extra guest, you can use the same microphone. Example of that is the Blue Microphone Icicle, which they've also been giving out as prizes here for about $40, or MXL is another brand there. So it's about the same price, $40-$50. If you do end up going with a standard microphone and I put an XLR, that's the cable interface for those types of microphones, you're going to have a couple of choices yet again to either go condenser microphone or dynamic microphone. Condenser microphones are they're the best reproduction of the human voice range, the highs and the lows. If you want to sound as close to yourself as possible, a condenser microphone is the way to go. However, there are some caveats there. A condenser microphone, they're extremely sensitive. They pick up all sorts of background noise. If you have a dog that walks around, toenails clicking on your tile, this microphone will pick that up. Air conditioner, right here in Arizona. Do you want to turn your air conditioner off while you're podcasting? If you have a condenser microphone and you don't, people are going to be able to hear that air conditioner in the background. So, and again, but this is a podcast. Maybe some people don't care so much about that. But just be aware of that. This is actually the microphone I have, the MXL990. I went with that because at the time it was recommended to me. I think I only paid $50 for them a few years ago. But you do have some options when you look at condenser microphones, and really just read reviews on them and talk to other podcasters, see what they're using. Dynamic microphones, they don't reproduce the human voice as well, but again, you don't have to deal with that background noise. You don't have that same issue with the condenser microphones. If I was to buy a microphone right now, I would probably go with a dynamic mic. I listen to a lot of podcasts, and while I'm told that that a condenser microphone better reproduces the human voice, I think those guys sound just fine on their podcasts. So I probably, once you're compressed down to MP3 and all that, maybe all those advantages get lost. But they sound fine. Aaron, you use a dynamic mic, right?
Sure. Yeah, I use the Shure PG58, which is a step down from the SM. It's actually about half the price.
Okay. And Aaron sounds just fine on his podcast.
Nice.
It's bigshowradio.com if you want to see what that microphone sounds like after it's been compressed down to MP3. Some examples there, the Shure SM58. And then if you want to spend a lot of money, you can actually get a dynamic microphone that sounds just as good, if not better, than some of these condenser mics. At least to get a condenser mic that sounds as good, you'd be spending even more money. Leo Laporte, probably one of the most prolific podcasters out there, uses a Heil PR40. He uses the same microphone on his radio show. He does a weekly radio show. Uses that same microphone for that. So that's a broadcast quality microphone. It's expensive though, $330. There's also the Electro Voice RE20. $20 says that if you listen to a talk show, this is the microphone they're using, like an AM radio talk show. The Electro Voice RE20 is like the most commonly used broadcast microphone. But again, $400, it's not cheap.
Hey, real quick?
Yeah.
Just to mention that the condenser microphones tend to be a little more fragile than dynamic.
That's true, they can be more fragile. They're also more sensitive to moisture. But we don't have to worry about that.
Moisture, what is that?
Really quick, I mentioned Aaron's show. Let me go ahead and plug mine as well. I'm going to go ahead and pass around some business cards here. If you want one, go ahead and take it and pass it on. If you don't, then just pass the stack along. There's also my contact information on here. If you guys have any questions, you don't feel comfortable raising your hand right now, shoot me an email, or heck, even call our show and leave a voicemail. Maybe it's something interesting we'll play it on this show. But yeah, if you just want to take one of those and pass it around. If you go with the standard microphone, you're going to need a mixer. And again, the use of a mixer is you're going to bring in lots of audio and mix it together and then send it out to your recording device. Most likely probably going to be a computer if you're doing a podcast. You can have multiple hosts. Maybe you're a budding musician and you want to plug your guitar into the amplifier and play some music. You can hook your iPod up to there and play sounds off of that. So I like to, when I recommend stuff here, for the most part I'm going for ultimate flexibility. I like having flexibility to change my show as needed and without spending extra money. And so a lot of the stuff I recommend here is going to be for ultimate flexibility. So once you decide that you want a mixer, you're also going to have some more choices, and that's the output interface. Your standard mixer is just going to be an analog output. The disadvantage of an analog output is if you're going to go into a computer, you need to convert it to digital. But you can buy a device to do that, and I'll actually go over that in a second here. This is my mixer right here, the PVPD8. Again, I don't remember spending that much money on it. I think inflation has gone up over the past few years. I maybe look for these things on sale. But the reason I went with the PV is PV is a known name. This was a recommended mixer to me as well, again. And it has a lot of capabilities of if I ever wanted to do editing of my microphones real time, they have mic inserts along the top here, the microphone inserts. And I just went with an analog to digital converter. And I actually, the flexibility, again, for ultimate flexibility, an analog digital converter is better, in my mind, than going with something with a built-in interface like a USB out, which I know a lot of guys here that do podcasts use the Alesis Multimix 8. The advantage of that is that it has a USB interface built into the mixer. So you can just take that mixer and plug it right into your computer. It does not have inserts on it, though. So if that was ever something you wanted to do in the future, you'd have to buy a different mixer. If you want to go really hardcore, you can get a FireWire out mixer, like the Mackie Onyx 820i. It's about $500. The advantage of the FireWire mixers is you can, with both the USB and the analog, once you take that audio and you go to record it, it's all been mixed together. I mean, that's what a mixer does. It mixes sounds together. So if someone's talking and someone else coughs, the only way to remove that cough is to remove the someone else talking at the same time. With the FireWire mixers, you can set them up so that each one of these mic channels, each one of these channels is a separate channel in the software. So if someone coughs, you can cut out just that cough and then still hear the person that was talking while that person coughed. So a lot more flexibility when you go to edit your sound. But again, they're cheap. I don't know what, does anyone here know of an inexpensive FireWire mixer?
The Multimix 8 is also available in the FireWire.
Does it do that separate channel though?
Yeah,
okay.
It's USB-based.
And is it still available though? I thought that had been discontinued.
You look for the FireWire.
Okay. It's a bit more expensive though, right?
Just a taste.
Okay. So if you're gonna, other hardware to consider though. So I already mentioned the analog to digital converter. This is the one I use, the Adderall UA-1EX. This is a great, I really like this interface. Really good quality. And one of the things that I actually do with this interface that you probably, at least as far as I know, can't do with like the Alesis with the built-in, is there's a little dip switch on the back here that separates the input and the output audio channels. So I actually have this plugged into my computer, and I have sounds coming out from the computer through that digital interface to my mixer, and then I have my full mix, my main mix out, going to that digital interface to the computer. Those channels don't cross, they're separate, so there's no crosstalk. So I'm actually, I can play sounds off of that computer, so I can use that same computer for my sound cart. Comes out, goes in the mixer, and then gets recorded through that loop interface. And whereas if you went with something like the Alesis, you'd need something else creating your sound card sounds, or you like your voicemails and other stuff that you're playing as you're recording. Yeah.
What's the advantage of the converter just putting a line in?
Like going to the microphone input on the back of your computer?
Well, not the microphone, but the line in. Yeah, there's the microphone out and there's the line in.
Right.
It's the same MIDI plug though.
It's going to be, it's an unbalanced input, and you're going to get a lot of static and noise. You want to convert to digital first. With USB, you get a nice clean sound. Just try it. You can find an inexpensive, in fact, you might even have one lying around your house, like a microphone that you can plug into your computer. Plug that in and just listen to all the background noise and static you hear. It's nasty. And if you took like a USB headset and did the same thing, you don't get any of that hiss. And so it's just a computer, the microphone input on a computer isn't designed for high quality audio stuff that you'd want to do for your podcast. Here's another option, the Behringer. It's inexpensive, but I've read reviews on it, and some people have complained about it. In fact, one of the lines in there is you get what you pay for. So I guess your mileage may vary. Another thing is if you're going to have multiple people in studio is to consider purchasing a headphone amplifier. I have this headphone amplifier. I usually try to stay away from Behringer products. I've never had any bad experiences with them, but if you go around on the internet, it gets bad-mouthed a lot because they're less expensive audio tools. So I can't say that they're bad stuff. I don't want to bad-mouth them. I just personally tend to avoid Behringer products. I don't care about... I don't need to avoid it for my headphone amplifier, though, because the use of a headphone amplifier is to amplify what you're monitoring. So if you have multiple people, you want them wearing headphones, so everyone can hear the audio that's being recorded. And so the headphone amplifier allows you to split that and have separate volume controls for each person listening. So if someone wants to hear it really loud, someone else wants to hear it a little bit more quietly, you have that control. But none of that gets recorded. So I don't care about using a Behringer for that because it's never, no one who listens to my podcast ever hears anything that comes out of that device. I don't own one of these, but this is the next thing I'm actually considering purchasing, which is a cough switch or a mute switch where you hold it down, that mutes your microphone. When you let go of it, your microphone isn't muted anymore. So if you have to cough or sneeze or maybe like when you're doing a podcast, a lot of time I play my voicemail live. What I actually do right now is I actually turn down the volume on our microphones as the voicemail's playing, especially if it's a long voicemail. Someone leaves me like a 1.5 minute voicemail. I don't want them hearing us breathing into the mics and or coughing or any of that as people are on my podcast are listening to my voicemail. So people don't do that, but I personally do that. The problem is there's been a couple times where I forgot to turn the volume back up after the voicemail's done playing. Or I turn up my volume, but don't turn up my wife's volume, and she gets really upset when I forget to do that. So the idea with the mute switch is what I'm planning on doing with this is just hold that down as the voicemail's playing, or hold that down as your intro music's playing, and then you have control as the person recording, you have control of when you're being muted or not.
Yeah, they have an opposite of that too, just like press
the talk. Oh, well, yeah. I don't want to make my wife hold a button the whole time she's talking.
If you have multiple people and only one wants to talk at a time.
Oh, yeah, I guess that is an option. The push to talk is usually used for the path for like when you're talking to an audio engineer, right? The reason I put this on here, though, is because this is a really cheap cough switch. $40, I know it's still expensive, and you have to buy one for each microphone. But I've been looking for a while, and the cheapest I could find before was like $100, and that's a lot of money. One of the other podcasts I listened to, done by Scott Johnson, if anyone's a podcast listener, you might know that name. He'd mentioned recently he'd gotten a cough switch, and so I shot him an email and said, hey, what are you using? He says he's using this cough switch, loves it, and at that price, I can't complain. So this will probably be the next purchase I'm going to make. I mentioned before inserts. This is one of the things you can do with those inserts, buy a compressor or gate. This is a two-channel gate, so you can do it for two microphones, $150. The advantage of that would be kind of like having an engineer as you're talking, when you go really loud, turning down your volume really quick. As you get quiet, maybe adjusting your volume up a little. That's essentially what that does. It's a little bit more technical than that, but the idea is that you're processing the audio. You can do a lot of this stuff after the fact, but I think the closer you can get the editing and to the actual recording, the better. Especially volume adjustments and all that. So again, it's a little expensive, and you might decide that you don't want to do that. But the advantage of going with like that PV mixer would be if you decided to buy something like this in the future, you would have that option. Yeah.
I've heard this. I think it might be worth mentioning as you talk about hardware. If you're thinking about the difference between the condenser mic and the dynamic mic, and pairing it with an audio interface. Huh? The dynamic mics often require additional power.
The condenser mics require phantom power.
Right.
I don't think the dynamic mics do. No.
Okay. No, I'm sorry. That's right.
The way around. Right. Yeah.
Most. So you have to make sure and get an audio interface.
Make sure
with
it has phantom power. I've never seen one that doesn't, though.
Okay.
I don't know if anyone has seen.
The big deal, though, is whether or not you spend a little bit more money and be able to send phantom out what channel?
Not all of
like
them.
Like the Alesis,
yeah.
Multimix is Phantom,
or on, or on. I think that's how my mixer is too. I think that's how the PVA is as well.
It's a bad thing to send Phantom to a mic.
To a dynamic. You destroy your microphone if you're sending 48 volts to it and it's not expecting it. Recording computer. So I recommend using a computer for recording. You can use whatever operating system you want. There's great recording applications for OS X, Windows, or Linux. In fact, you know, one of those would be, I know a lot of people use Audacity to record their podcasts. That software works on all those. When you're using a computer or building a computer or using an old computer, just consider the software demands. What software are you going to be running in that? What are you going to be recording? And what are the demands of that software? Just make sure your machine can handle it. You don't want your audio to be dropping out because your processor is getting pegged as you're recording something. I would definitely recommend using a laptop. Why? Because it has a battery in it. If you're 45 minutes into recording your podcast and the lights go out, your power goes out, where are you at? You know, that might have been the best podcast you ever did. One for the history books, and power just went out, and that thing's gone. Now, a lot of good recording software actually writes to the hard drive as it's recording. So, and they'll recover, they'll try to recover from stuff like that. But if the power went out and it also took your hard drive out with it, I just wouldn't risk it. And laptops, most everybody has a laptop, it's easy to do. If you don't want to use a laptop, consider throwing a UPS battery backup on your computer. Yeah?
I would strongly recommend getting a quiet laptop.
Ah.
A lot of them, especially the PC ones, have
like loud fans.
And when you're doing audio stuff,
it's a
long period of time, even a Mac will kick on fans at high speed. It's kind of loud.
That's a good point. Thanks, Brian. Yeah, you know, it's usually showing the waveforms as it's recording it, using the video card to draw that stuff, and it's showing your levels. So yeah, it can actually be pretty intensive on your computer as you're recording. So you bought all that hardware, let's set it up. First thing you want to do is, of course, plug everything in. Plug everything into your mixer, plug your USB stuff into your computer if that's all you're doing. If it's USB, you're actually pretty much almost done once you plug it into your computer. Just, you know, you just need to adjust your volume levels. So with your mixer, so if you have a microphone, you're going to be plugging it. It's an XLR. You'll be plugging it into that plug up top there. And then the first thing that you're going to want to do is adjust your gain of that microphone. You're only going to do this once. See, you'll notice that kind of the size of the knobs show you how often you'll be using them. But what you're going to want to do is on your level down here, put that at zero. That's straight up. On your master mix right here, put that at zero. And then start talking into your microphone. As you're monitoring, start off by just plugging into the little headphone jack, because it's just going to be you on the mixer, and start talking. See how it sounds. And adjust that gain until you sound good at a normal speaking voice, or the voice you're planning on using to record your podcast at, and you don't get a lot of background noise. This is probably the most artistic thing when it comes to podcasting, is setting up the mixer. If you had ridiculous amounts of money and you want to bring an audio engineer in, this is what you'd bring them in for, is setting up your levels on your mixer. But I can't afford one, so I do this myself. But the main thing is getting a good audio level without that background noise. You're not getting static, you're not getting feedback, just all that stuff. And then leave it there. This is going to be different for every microphone. Even microphones of the same brand, they'll sometimes respond differently to voice. So you're going to want to do that level for all of your microphones. And you know, maybe even consider putting like a piece of tape where you ended up leaving that at, so that if someone comes along and starts playing with your knobs, you don't have to go through that whole process again. Because it's work doing that and getting it to a right sound. These knobs right here, these are your equalizers. I don't touch those. I leave those all at zero. I think for the voice, you don't want to be increasing the low or the high, or you want people's voices to sound normal. I think this is more for if you're hooking up instruments. You have some effects, pre and post processing effects. These ones, for the most part, you can set them all down to negative infinity because you won't be using them. And most likely you won't be using them. I'll be describing a mix minus setup where you would want to use some of those in a little bit here. This is down here on this mixer. This is the left and right, the panning. You know, all the way, turn all the way to the left. All that voice is going to be on the left side of your headphone. Turn all the way to the right. It's all going to be on the right side. So again, you're going to want those all at center for recording.
Hey, Kevin.
Yeah.
One tip for people that are doing a sound check, turn it up to the point where you see it's getting into the orange or the yellow, depending on your mixer.
Yeah.
Once it gets to the red, that's clipping. But if you can get it into the orange or the red, leave it there. Even if it sounds loud to you, because I learned really early on, it's very easy to in post, turn down audio. You can do it through several different software. Turning it up, whole other ball.
Because as you increase the volume, you're also increasing all the background noise, as per Aaron's point. Just make sure you're not clipping, because if you clip, you can't recover from that either. So that means that's where the audio is actually going higher than the output can handle. And as per your comment, if it sounds loud to you and you don't like it, you have a volume control on your headset. So just turn the volume down for yourself once you have that set. But yeah, these are the lights as you're talking. That's also a good thing to make sure if you start talking, you don't hear anything, to maybe start looking for your headphone volume and all that, is if you see these lights bouncing as you talk, that means that you at least have the microphone set up correctly or plugged in correctly. So that's setting up your mixer. Also look at any external volume controls. This digital interface here has a little volume slider on it. So that's another volume that you're going to need to adjust. If you have a USB headset, you're going to need to go into your operating system and set the mic level for that as well. So that's where you're going to set the mic level for a USB microphone. The rule of thumb I like to use once you start monitoring this stuff in software, and this is really good for as you're recording too, is as everyone's talking, you kind of want that bouncing somewhere between negative 18 to negative 6 decibels, negative 6 dB. At 0 dB, that's where you're starting to clip. And down in these bottom ranges, you're getting into, as Aaron was saying before, you get that really quiet, and when you try to boost that in post, you're going to get a lot of background noise. So this is just a rule of thumb. You know, if you're at negative 4 or you're at negative 20, you're probably still okay. As I'm recording, that's where I like to see the levels bouncing. One of the things, this is a mix minus is kind of a complicated thing. It actually took me a while to get this set up properly on my mixer. Now again, this is one of the more technical complex things I mentioned I was going to talk about. I don't expect you, if you have a mixer at home, after I have this conversation, I don't expect you to be able to go home and be able to set up a mix minus. However, you'll know what a mix minus is for, and if you ever in the future decided that what you'd want to use a mix minus for is what would solve a problem you're having with your setup, you'd know that it's something you can do with a mixer. So the idea of a mix minus is specifically if you have a remote host, let's say you have someone that you're talking to over Skype, or maybe for simplicity purposes, let's say the phone. You're talking to someone over a phone line, you have that phone line coming into the input of your mic, of your mixer. So they're sending sound to you, and you're sending sound to them, right? You don't want to send their sound back to them. If you just send them your full mix and you're bringing them into your mixer, then they're going to hear themselves. And they're probably going to hear themselves with like a half second delay. And I don't know if you've ever tried talking and thinking coherently when you're hearing your voice a half second after you say it. Some people may be able to do it. I can't. I start going crazy. I cannot think coherently. I can't formulate full sentences. It's bad. And you're going to be annoying the person at that other end. So the idea of a mix minus is to send them your full mix minus what they're sending you. That's where the term comes from for mix minus. In order to set up a mix minus, you're probably going to be using your, on my mixer, I use the EFX channel. So remember I said to set this down to negative infinity, so now here's where you're going to be changing some of that. So let's say that I'm bringing that person in on channel 5 right here. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to send them, my outputs here, I have my main out up top here, and then I have two outputs channels here. I have the EFX send and the MON send, effects and monitor. This is monitor right here, this is effects. So these are the levels for what gets sent out of this top input here. These are the effects these are the knobs that control what gets sent out of this bottom one here. The reason I use the EFX is because if I ever did put inserts in here, or did anything to my microphones, this is what I sound like before it goes through those inserts. This is what I sound like after. So that's why I'd use these. If you're not doing any inserts, you could probably use either one of these. But I just went ahead and used the EFX for that, because I'm only setting up one mix minus. So if they're coming in on, two. So they're coming in on here. So what I'm going to do is, and I'm sending them the EFX. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to, on their channel, I turn that all the way down to negative infinity, and then I turn it up to zero, or another level on all the audio I'm going to be sending them. And just like that, they'll only be getting what's turned up. They'll only hear if what's on any of these channels of these knobs where it's higher than negative infinity. And that's just a really simple way to set up a mix minus. I guess I'll end there. So that's my demo on my mix minus. All right, so you got all your hardware set up, and you're ready to start recording. Let's talk about some software. First thing here is recording software. We've had a few sessions here in the past few days that have talked about this stuff ad nauseum. I'm not going to go over why you choose this, but just make sure your sample rate's set at 44/100 and your sample size set at 16-bit for recording. Just numbers to know. Oh, by the way, I passed around that card. There's a website on there. I'm going to be making a post with this PowerPoint slides on there. So if there's something I skip over through too quickly and I have a chance to make notes of, then it'll be there. There's lots of different software you can use for recording. When it comes to recording, for the most part, I'd say that all software is created equal. Where you start to get some arguments, for the most part, is when you start editing. So Audacity is free. Good for recording. Adobe Audition, it's not cheap. It's about $300. That's for the newest Audition 3, I think, is the latest version. That's full license, non-upgrade. I think the upgrade's $100. Sound Studio. So this is Windows only too, by the way. Adobe Audition is Windows only. Audacity works Mac, OS X, and Linux. Sound Studio. This is an OS X only application. This is what I use, and I'm actually recording on my Mac. I didn't pay $80 for it. I got it through like one of those Mac bundle software things. So that's why I use Sound Studios, because I paid $60 and it came with like five different pieces of software, and Sound Studio was in there, and it works great for me. Another piece of software that I haven't used on a regular basis personally is Amadeus Pro, but I've heard this recommended a lot, and it's half the price of Sound Studio. So that's, and again, this is OS X only. And of course, if you have a Mac, you can also record in GarageBand. I've never recorded in GarageBand. I don't know if this is still an issue, because again, I haven't used GarageBand, but I remember listening to people's podcasts, and they'd be getting up to an hour of their show, and they say, oh, we gotta end the show real quick because GarageBand's gonna cut us off. And I guess it was how they'd set up GarageBand that they could only record for an hour. I don't want my recording software telling me how long my show can be, so it may be a way to get around that. I've just never felt like dealing with it, and again, I have this software that works just fine for it. The other thing I don't like about GarageBand is with Sound Studio, I start it up, I set my audio inputs, and I hit record and I'm recording. With GarageBand, it's like, let me add a male vocal channel, and you know, it makes you define like what you're recording. It just seems overly complex for me for a podcast. It's probably great if you're gonna create a GarageBand, but it just feels like it's not a good podcasting tool for me. Again, other people may argue with that, and they'll live by it. In fact, I know people that say that it's the best podcasting tool ever. Just I don't use it.
I have a question.
Yeah.
These are primarily used in podcasting, but would this be something you would also use if you want to record, like yourself playing guitar and singing, for instance?
Yeah.
Can you do the same thing with these?
Yeah.
Can you mix different tracks?
Yeah, I know. Sound Studio you can. I believe Amadeus, they call it a multi-channel editor.
Okay.
Audacity, you can do that. Audition, definitely. In fact, that's what a lot of people use Audition just for that. Skype. If you're making a call to someone, if you're going to be having a guest host remotely on your podcast, if you're going to do an interview over the phone, use Skype. You're gonna want to use some sort of VoIP. There's a voice over internet. There's lots of them out there. Skype's the best. If you're using something besides Skype, you don't sound as good. Unfortunately, it's proprietary software, and I hope they never go away, because probably about half the podcasts I listen to start to sound like crap. It's Skype. They do some magic juju, and the stuff just works great. However, you can make it sound even better if it, you know, out of the box, which would be setting up a port forward. I'm not going to go over how to set up port forwarding. Do a Google search for Skype port forward, and you'll find 20 tutorials, probably 100 tutorials on how to do it. I'm not going to repeat all those guys' words. But the main thing is you're going to go into, this is on a Mac, you pull up the properties of Skype, click on the Advanced tab. There's going to be a number down right here. It says Incoming Connection Port. You can change it. Or you can just leave it on the default value. Essentially, what you're going to do is you're going to forward this port outcoming connect. You're going to set up your router, your internet router, to forward this port to your recording computer. And that's going to improve the performance of your Skype call. The other thing you want to do is make sure your sound input and output is set up properly. I have a MacBook, and guess what's built into it? Speakers and a microphone. As soon as I launch my Skype or my audio software, and like I say, hey, and I click record, I might not be recording my digital audio interface. So I have a digital audio interface, that analog to digital converter, or maybe you have a USB mixer, you have that plugged in. You want to make sure that Skype's using that as your input and output. Otherwise, you're not going to hear the person you're talking to. You're not going to hear on your headphones. You're going to hear them on your computer speaker, and they're not going to hear you through that nice microphone that you spent all that money buying. They're going to hear you through the microphone built into your computer, and they're going to hate the experience. And they might not hear half the stuff you say. And they'll be talking all over you, and that's never fun. In order to record Skype, there's a couple ways to do it. I'm going to jump real quick here. One of the ways I've done it for a long time is with a mix minus with two computers. If you're bringing them into your main mix along with everything you're saying, so you just record that main mix out, and you've recorded the Skype conversation. It does require two computers, though, because you have to have a computer set up for Skype, and then what's receiving your main mix. So it takes two computers in order to record Skype with a mix minus.
You can use two digital mics too. You can use like two H2s or two iRivers on one on each side.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And
okay.
And have a nice backup and then just mix it.
Okay.
That works out really
so,
well.
So using some instead of recording to a computer, recording to a standalone digital recorder like an iRiver. Okay.
Right.
Or like the Zooms or okay. Good
yeah,
point.
And you just exchange the one file and you've got it.
Right. I had two computers lying around. I didn't have another. Probably the easiest way, and I've actually started doing this more myself. Actually, I do both. I record to the software and to my mix minus, so I have two recordings, and if something happens to the other one, I back up. It's good to have. So this is on OS X, Audio Hijack Pro. This is actually what I use. Again, this came with a bundle. that's why I use it. That's why I have it. It works great, though, and it's the less expensive of the ones that are on there. The nice thing about this is, remember, you can... One of the tricks you can do with a mixer is you can put one person all the way in the left channel, another person all the way in the right channel, and by doing that, you have two separate channels. You kind of get like what I was mentioning with the FireWire, where someone coughs, you can just cut out them on the left channel, and then you hear the other person on the right channel. The problem is, though, that as you're monitoring, you hear one person in your left ear and the other person in your right ear, and when I'm trying to podcast, I don't like hearing stuff like that. It messes with me, and also I ran it by my wife, and she said no. So the nice thing about Audio Hijack Pro is you can do the same thing. You can have the Skype call be recorded on the left channel and all of your audio that you're sending them be recorded on the right channel, and you don't hear it that way. You still hear them in both speakers because of the way you have your mixer set up, in both headphone speakers, the way you have your mixer set up, but you get that same flexibility of when you go to edit it, if your buddy was drunk and he was talking over you telling finding the cure to cancer, you can mute him out as you go on your soliloquy. The other software for OS X, Wiretap Studio. I've heard some people wax on about Wiretap Studio, and actually I bought a few of those Mac bundles. So I have a lot of those Mac bundles. I've played with it. It seems like it's more powerful probably than Audio Hijack, but it's more complex. Audio Hijack really seemed to be really quickly set up record, so I really like Audio Hijack. I have both, and that's why I'm still using this Audio Hijack. On the Windows side, I haven't done this ever on Windows. I did some Google searches, had some reviews. If someone here has another suggestion than what I have listed here, I'd love for you to speak up. But I listed here Easy VoIP Recorder for $20, Hot Recorder $15, Pamela I've actually heard of before for $23, and there's a free version. Does anyone here have?
I use a different way of recording Skype. I use SoundFlower and Line-In to record directly into
the
USB.
Okay.
And then you get GarageBand on your computer, and then those other two software packages are free.
Okay, so using SoundFlower, Audio Hijack actually uses SoundFlower.
Uh-huh. And
so
then another package called Line-In, where you can choose which.
Right, I've seen that set up. Yeah, again, Google recording Skype, you'll get all sorts of responses. In fact, I've seen the way you've done it when I was researching on how to do it myself. I just decided to go with the software to make it more simple for myself. One piece of software. Does anyone record to Windows? Skype to Windows? No? Okay.
My host does with a thing called Skype Call Recorder.
Skype Call Recorder?
Yeah.
Okay.
I've done it with Pamela.
You don't with Pamela?
Yeah.
Does it work?
Yeah, it works, but I didn't do it with the intention of, like, broadcasting it. You know,
okay.
Just for my, like, reference. So
okay.
Not really sure how good the
talking
call
to
is.
Your lawyer, huh?
Record everything.
When it comes to software that you... So sound you want to add while you're doing your show, you have voicemails. Again, maybe you want to do Foley sounds. Maybe whenever someone says something that you think is funny, you want to play a laugh track. Please don't do that. I won't listen to your show, sorry. The software I use is called Soundbite. It's available on both Windows and OS X. I meant to check to see if it was available on Linux. I don't think it is, but I'm not sure. But it's $40, and that gets you a whole year of their upgrades. So if for some reason they come out with a new version and you want the features of that new version, you are going to have to pay the upgrade price to get it. That is, again, something that kind of annoys me about that software. But I haven't found a better sound card program. And what's actually kind of cool is I haven't tried this out yet, but I was on their website when I was doing research for this stuff in order to talk to you guys about this. I found out they have a little iPod Touch and iPhone application called iSoundbite. So the way Soundbite works is you have all your audio. Each one of these is referred to as an audio cart. You know, going back to the old days where you actually had a cartridge that you plug in for your audio cart and radio. And so if you click on this, it'll play the sound that you have stored in there, or you assign a hotkey to it. So maybe you set all your voicemails. You have four voicemails. You press one, it plays voicemail one. Two, it plays voicemail two, et cetera. You press it again, you can tell it to pause it or to stop it. And you can also have separate volume control for all of them. It's a really cool, and I like the look of it, too. It's really simple, and it works really well. And with this new iPod Touch / iPhone application, it connects to the Soundbite running on your computer, and instead of having to click a hotkey on the keyboard or click your mouse on this button, you just tap it on the iPod Touch, and it plays coming out of here. So it's kind of like the like the iTunes remote, if you've ever used that. So you know, you press the button on your iPod Touch, but the sound's actually coming out of your laptop. It's the same type of setup. So, and it's free. Of course, I've just spent $40. But I want to try this out for our show. I think it's really cool, because my wife has an iPod Touch, so it should be cool. Soundplant, I know Dan Fairband, he last year, did you mention it this year?
No, I didn't even bring it. I didn't bring it up.
Did I mispronounce your name?
Yeah, it's okay.
What is it?
Fire Robin.
Fire Robin. Wow, okay, cool. Sorry about that.
Nobody
knows. That
sounds much more badass.
That's like awesome when you say it like that. so Dan uses Soundplant, and you're really happy with it, right?
Been using it for 3 years. It's awesome.
And it's free. So, again, the great thing about this, Soundbite has a free demo, though. So I'd say download both these. Decide which one you like better. When it comes to editing, this is where you'll probably get the most podcasters arguing. Is when it comes to editing, what software they like using for editing. A lot of people use Audacity. Audacity's free. Although I've had problems with it crashing on me. Dan just mentioned yesterday during his when he was talking about Audacity, it crashes a lot. I don't want my software crashing on me when I'm editing audio. It's just I just don't want to deal with it. I'm willing to pay a little bit of money in order to keep something in order for more stable software. You may not be. You know, again. Like I said, I don't make money off my podcast yet. I'm still wanting to spend this money. Maybe I'm crazy. What I use is Adobe Audition. Now, I didn't pay $300 for it. I paid about $30 for it. I'm using Adobe Audition 1.5. And actually, based on the reviews I've read of 3, I've actually heard some people say 1.5 is better. I don't know. I haven't tried 3. But I love Adobe Audition 1.5. And if you look around a lot on the internet, you can probably do the same thing I did. I just searched everywhere for a copy of Adobe Audition 1.5, and I found it for $30. You might be able to do the same thing. And it's a great piece of software. I've used all this software for editing. I've used all this software for editing. and I've tried a lot of stuff. I've tried doing, I use Sound Studio, and trying to do the same stuff I do in Audition, it's not as intuitive. It doesn't have the same power and capability. Adobe Audition is a really nice piece of software. But again, you can use all this stuff, all the software here listed for editing your audio on your podcast. Once you have your audio, once you've done your recording of your podcast, before you edit it, before you do anything else to it, If it's voice only, level it. I tried for a while doing what's known as a group waveform normalize and audition and got similar results, but especially for voice, the nice thing about group waveform normalize is I didn't get the ping pong effect from music files. So I could leave my music files in there and still, it didn't distort the sound. Anybody who's used Levelator, if you've ever run music through it, the music sounds really weird. Especially if it's a longer musical clip with lots of highs and lows. It tries to compress it like someone talking, and it just doesn't work well. But Levelator, it's magic. For podcast voice, people leave me voicemails. I run all my voicemails through Levelator before I play them on my show. It's a really great piece of software. All you do, you have a WAV file or an AIFF file. You just drag it on top of it, and it runs its magic, gives you an output file, and then you can edit from there.
Is that Windows also or just Mac?
Windows, Mac, okay. And Linux, all three. And it's free. Yeah, in fact, it can take some time. Like for a 30-minute clip, it probably takes, I'd say, about 5 minutes on my computer. I don't have the best computer, but depending on probably on how good your processor is, that's going to determine how long it takes to transcode the audio. I have some MP3 compression recommendations. So once you've edited your audio, yeah.
This is just for audio only, or can a Levelator?
Audio, Levelator is audio only. Now, if when you record your video and it has the audio associated with it, if you can split that audio out into a WAV file, you can Levelate it. And I've done that before too, and it works great. For MP3, so when you send your podcast out, you're sending it out as an MP3 most likely, right? You're gonna want to compress it. Depending on the content of your show. So this is my one content discussion. I said I wasn't going to talk about content, but this is the one time I talk about content. So depending on the content of your show, if you're like a music show, like let's say you're a cover band, you're doing shows on cover bands, probably most of your show is going to be music. I would recommend encoding that at 128 kbps stereo. You might want to go a little bit higher if you still don't like the sound quality, if you're like a big audio nut. Just watch the size of your files though. Just remember that depending on your hosting, you might be paying for bandwidth. Depending who's going to be downloading your file, that stuff can get really big. Voice with some music. This is essentially my show. I play some music in the middle. I've been encoding my show at 80 kbps mono for some time. I looked at what other podcasters were doing, stuff I liked. This is what they were doing, and it sounded good to me on their show. So that's what I've been using for mine. Based on some discussion yesterday, I've heard some other opinions. And I'm throwing this in here because with the caveat that I haven't tried this, I don't know what it sounds like, but this is what the quote-unquote experts are recommending, which for Voice With Some Music, Evoterra is recommending 96 kbps joint stereo. So use that as you will. And with voice only, again, I mentioned Leo Laporte before, probably the most prolific podcaster in the community. You look at his shows, every single one of his shows is encoded at 64 mono. Again, Evo recommends 96 kbps joint stereo.
Now, Leo's streaming to like 300,000 people, so it might be to save money.
But he's not even paying for his bandwidth. So what does he care?
That's why he doesn't
pay. He might have, you know, it's possible that that's part of his consideration. While he's not paying for it, he might still want to be nice to the people who are giving him that bandwidth for free. So that is a good point.
That's what he can say. For the love of God.
Because I sure as heck will never have that many
listeners. Well, the smaller the file, the easier it is for downloading or streaming.
Exactly.
Too, so.
You know,
it
if
helps
someone's
the listener.
If someone's trying to download your show right before they're going to work, you know, you want them to be able to listen to it, right? Make that quicker for them. You're also going to want to edit before you upload your MP3. You're going to want to edit the tags on it, set up your show name, show title, what episode it is, your show notes in there, the description. I do all this on Windows because, again, I'm using Adobe Audition to edit, and that Adobe Audition only runs on Windows. So I use a program on Windows called Audio Shell Tag Editor. I really like this application. What it does is for all of your media files, all of your MP3s, you right-click on it and go Properties on the file, and it puts an extra tab in there, extra couple tabs. But one of the tabs is to edit the information, the tags on for the show. So you put the description, album art, everything. It's a really nice little application. On OS X, or of course you can also do it in iTunes. I know a lot of people do that in iTunes, so you can do that in Windows. On OS X, you can also use iTunes, or doing some search around. Again, I haven't used this software. There's ID3 editor, some people were recommending. It was about $15. So once you have your show, you're gonna need to upload it somewhere. For hosting, this is, you know, a lot of people, or you know, some people do self-hosting. Really what you wanna do is if you wanted to do self-hosting, is do the math. How much bandwidth do you have on your website? And you know, it's really just a simple of number, the file size times the number of downloads is gonna be equal to your bandwidth. If you have 100 listeners, and just multiply that by your file size, and if it's less than your bandwidth, you're probably gonna be okay. The problem is if like you become an overnight success, maybe Leo Laporte talks about your podcast on Facebook, you might not be able to handle that the bandwidth influx, and then you know your ISP's billing you ridiculous amounts of money. That's where stuff like Libsyn, a lot of people have used Libsyn, because what Libsyn doesn't charge you for your bandwidth, it just charges you for how much the size of your files that you upload. So again, something else to be concerned about your file size with. But for $5 a month, they'll give you 50 megabytes. Most people do the $12 a month so you can have up to 250 megabytes of show a month, and you can have millions of listeners, and they don't charge you any extra. The hosting company I use, 1&1, just recently announced for all their packages, unlimited bandwidth. I don't know how they're doing that or what their model is there, but that's something else to consider. If you do go with them, I'd appreciate it if you use my affiliate ID, though. But I'm considering doing this myself because, again, I'm paying $12 a month for Libsyn, and I have my own website and stuff that I'm doing through hosting through 1&1, so I'm considering, why am I paying extra? If they're going to give me unlimited bandwidth, I might start using them to host my podcast and save a little bit of money on a monthly basis. Because, again, I'm not making anything, guys. Another thing, Libsyn's been around. They've probably been around for the longest that I know of. There's some other companies that have cropped up. One of the podcasts I listened to actually started using Podbean to do hosting. Very similar to Libsyn. Looks like they're a little cheaper, too, depending on your needs. So 350 megabytes for $2 less a month. Again, I haven't used them. Does anyone here have any experience with them? No? Okay. But I do know it's the podcast I listened to that actually recently started doing this is the official Xbox Magazine podcast. So they're not a small podcast. And they're using Podbean. And while we're up here, did anyone have any other hosting services for podcasts or not that they recommend?
I hate to say it, but Mevio.
I went on Mevio's website. Mm-hmm. I couldn't find anything. You know, someone else threw Mevio's name out to me as well. Woe did. And I looked on their website, and I couldn't find where, here, host your podcast with us. I could find nothing like that. I searched for about 5 minutes, and, If I spent that much time and couldn't find anything, I didn't want to throw it up here and let you guys figure it out for yourself. So, in order for a podcast to be a podcast, it needs an RSS feed. An RSS feed allows people to subscribe to your podcast, and as you release new shows, they automatically download it. That's, without an RSS feed, your podcast is just an MP3 file on a server somewhere. And there's lots of those. So, if you're doing your own hosting, you might consider building your own RSS feed. You can find instructions for how Apple wants you to do it here on this website here. I threw Apple's on there instead of like the W3C standard or the other standard for RSS. It's because Apple's does weird stuff, and you're probably going to want iTunes to like your podcast. And most of the other stuff, iTunes is the most picky. So if you make it so it works with iTunes, it should work with everything else. Just kind of how it is. I would not recommend doing that, though. I don't know how to make my own RSS feed manually. It's not straightforward, at least for a podcast. The software, there's also software you can use where you essentially point to your file, put all the tags in it, and it will automatically generate the RSS feed for you. I haven't used this software, but I've heard, Leo Laporte himself was saying that he used this software for some time to create his RSS feed. I don't know if he's still doing it. It's $40 feeder. It's OS X only, though. And I know a lot of people that use WordPress and similar plugins like PodPress in order to generate their RSS feeds for them. That's probably one of the easier ways to do it if you have a WordPress blog that you're uploading your shows to. I personally now, I used to use Libsyn to generate my RSS feed. I'm now using FeedBurner. FeedBurner is really cool. You just point it at any... So if you have a blog that you're uploading your shows to that has an RSS feed already associated with it, but it's probably not formatted properly for a podcast, What FeedBurner does is you point them to your RSS feed for your blog, and they look for the audio files and video files in there, depending on how you have it set up, and it automatically creates the enclosure tags. So it creates a podcast feed, RSS feed, from your standard text blog RSS feed. And it's a really cool piece of web application. It's free. Google bought them a year ago, maybe a little longer ago, and have done nothing with it. Google's not even supporting it. It's actually, that'd be one thing, one reason I would recommend maybe not considering FeedBurner is they are, I've asked questions on their forums, and some users try and help you sometimes, but for the most part, all I see on there is questions that aren't being answered. Yeah.
I totally agree with you there, but just talking to Doug Welch this morning about RSS stuff, and they are integrating it into Google Analytics. So
it's kind of probably like what they did with Google when they bought Grand Central. They just let it sit for some time, and then before they came out with Google Burner or something.
Probably behind the scenes, rebuilding it from scratch or something.
Probably. It'd just be nice if they would at least like let us know that, instead of letting all these questions pile up, just kind of annoying. Because I did have some problems with it at first. I was able to finally figure out my issue with it, but definitely from not with any help from Google. And if you do hosting with Libsyn, Podbean, all those types of guys, most of them will have an ability to automatically generate an RSS feed for you. If I was to make a recommendation starting out, I would say go with Libsyn, or maybe Podbean if you like their price structure better. But I have personal experience with Libsyn. When I was first doing my podcast, that's how I did it with Libsyn. It was dead simple. I'd upload my file, and I'd say create new post, create the post. RSS feed was already created, done. It was really, really easy to do. So that's probably the simplest way to get your podcast out there. So that's pretty much most of the content I have to cover. As far as if you have questions, the thing that I recommend is to make friends with other podcasters. This is what helped me out the most when I was starting out podcasting, was finding people that I could ask questions of. How do you do this? What microphone do you use? What mixer do you have? All that stuff. So I actually threw up here on Twitter, I actually created a list of podcasters that I follow on Twitter. You might find some people in there to follow yourself and ask questions of. Maybe they'll follow you back so you can get a dialogue going. When I started out, I was actually on the forums I used that I got a lot of help from. They don't exist. Well, they exist, but nobody's using them anymore. It was the Podcast Academy forums. I got a lot of good help from there, but unfortunately, the people who run it, like the guy, like changed jobs, and anyway, the guy who was really useful on there was Paul Figg, and he'd answer all of your technical questions. He was a great guy. But so I would recommend maybe checking out like either the Podcast Alley forums or the Podcast Pickle forums. I haven't used these because I used the Academy when I was going through the learning process. Does anyone else have some forums that they use where they get good questions answered? No? All right. So that's my suggestions there. This is my contact information. You can hit me up on Twitter, go to our podcast website and send us emails there, or my personal blog website, which is transmatrix.net. Did anyone else have any further questions or comments? Yeah.
Just with the whole RSS thing, recommend using your RSS feed from your blog and forwarding it to wherever you're hosting, so if you ever change in the future, you don't lose all the subscribers.
Keeping control of your RSS feed, yeah, good point. You know what? I got all this swag up here. We got a few times. Does anyone need a GoDaddy mouse pad?
Sure.
Thank you. Anyone else? Window shade?
Window shade.
Sure.
Window shade. Sure. Window shade.
Look at you.
Yeah, seriously.
All right, balloons, beach balls.
I'll go for beach balls. Kids need beach balls.
Overheard.
These are harder to throw out than frisbee.
Hit me.
Anyone else? I guess you can come up there and grab them if you want them. I'm not gonna throw these. I don't know what these things are. So I guess if you want more GoDaddy swag, just come up here and grab what you want. Thank you guys so much for coming. I really appreciate it.